Welcome to our Oklahoma Farm Bureau Small Business Administration Paycheck Protection Program update webinar. I'll turn it over to Oklahoma Farm Bureau President Rod Mozell to get us kicked off.
Thank you, Dustin. And we're excited to have two guests that we have with us on the first program we did on Paycheck Protection Program a few weeks ago when this program was first announced and when it became clear that it would have some agricultural impact that maybe a lot of folks weren't used to having SBA programs that affected the farm and ranch. And we have a lot of small business members and within Farm Bureau as well. So we did that first program, and we're delighted to have had Dottie Overall, who's the state director of this U.S. Small Business Administration, and Kent Faison, who's head of the program at Bank First, which is one of our state's largest community bankers. And both of them have been gracious enough to join us again tonight with an update now that there have been $310 billion of additional funds put into that program available nationally. And so we're going to ask each of them here in a minute for a general update of where things are at as the program relaunched yesterday. I do have here at Farm Bureau headquarters with me Steve Thompson, who's head of our public policy, and Thad Doy, who's our executive director. And the three of us will be helping with questions later on, and I might go ahead and give you a phone number if you have questions now or at some point during the program you want us to pass on to Dottie and Kent. You can send those either through your Zoom Q&A box, or you can text them to Dustin at 405-627-9057. That's 405-627-9057. Why don't I go ahead and quickly turn it to Dottie to maybe give us an update. The funds ran out, I think, on April 16th from the first $349 billion that was available nationally. And I think you can correct me, Dottie, if I'm wrong, but I understand Oklahoma firms were committed for $4.6 billion of that first round of PPP or Paycheck Protection Program forgivable loans. Can you maybe tell us what's happened with the relaunch of the program yesterday? And what, I'm sure it's crazy at the SBA right now. So maybe a brief update of where we're at, and then we'll get to the banking world.
Sure. As of 3:30, we have got more than 100,000 PPP loans for, and that's over 4,000 lenders across the country. I don't have the most recent Oklahoma figures. Hopefully they'll be out tomorrow. But it has been challenging for lenders, as you can imagine. And everybody tried to get things in the system yesterday. It went again. So they're putting some on quickly you can put them in. But I think it's going great guns. This time, additional, the money was appropriated slightly differently. There were buckets, so for the small banks, for the medium-sized banks, and then for all others. And I think they've probably gone to the top of the small bank money. So that doesn't mean smaller banks can't put in, but they'll go into the general fund. But I think that was a good step to allow the smaller banks an opportunity to get their loans in. One other thing that came out with the legislation that passed over the weekend was that agricultural endeavors will be allowed to participate in the EIDL loan program. I don't have any guidelines on that yet, and unfortunately, they've closed that portal for EIDL loans until they process everything that's in the queue. Once they have that done, then they will reopen that portal and agricultural enterprises will be allowed to file in that program. But I haven't seen the guidelines for that yet. So good news, bad news.
And I understand in that EIDL loan program that there's, which we might say what that's for, economic injury disaster
that's
loan?
Right, that's our traditional economic injury, which is to businesses that were impacted economically by a disaster. A lot of people are probably familiar with the physical disaster, but we also have this economic injury disaster loan program. And initially, that wasn't open to agricultural enterprises, but this last funding is we're going to open it to agriculture. But again, we have to wait till the portal opens, and we're not sure when that's going to be yet. They were so inundated with loan applications that they just decided to get caught up with that first. Now, that is for operating costs. There was the EIDL Advanced Program, which allowed businesses to apply, and it was based on $1,000 a person, and that was a forgivable feature. So if you had four employees, you could apply for $4,000 that you would not have to pay back. But if you were looking for the money for operating costs, then that was for the EIDL loan. That was separate from the advance.
And so the good news is that Congress in this last deal expanded that to include agricultural operations, and that right. still includes up to a $10,000 grant with that application if they qualify. The bad news is we don't know when that's going to reopen until they process what's already in the stream. So.
Right, to see how money is available, that's correct.
Okay, let me flip now to Kent, and he's been on the front lines. I think during the first round, Kent, I think your bank first team was, I think, did the most loans in Oklahoma, or was right near the top of the most loans in Oklahoma under the Paycheck Protection Program. And so you all saw lots of action, and you're already geared up in this next round. And Dottie referred to the problems that they're having on the computer software since reopening yesterday. You might give us a view from the banker's side about what's going on and trying to process what you already have and how folks go about getting involved to apply now if they haven't yet.
Sure. Well, Rod, we did just right under 5,500 loans in the first round, which was right at $828 million in funding in that first round. A lot has happened since then. I think from the last time that we talked, we may have gotten two more IFRs, and then we've gotten a grand total of six or seven different publications of frequently asked questions that try to give us a little bit more insight into how Treasury and SBA are looking at the program. The biggest thing that has happened since we talked last was the self-employed individuals were added to the program. The problem is when we ran out of money on that Thursday, a lot of those self-employed people had not been able to get their applications in. So over the last 2 weeks, we've been taking those applications, processing those, getting them ready so that we could move them as quickly as possible into the system. So we have slightly over 1,500 loans in our queue right now that have gone through our vetting process and are ready to be submitted into the E-Trans system. We geared up once again to do a 24/7 process whereby we run 4 6-hour shifts with people putting loans into the system. During the first round, we were able to do about one loan every 7 minutes was what we were actually seeing. So for the first day of the round two, we were getting one loan done every hour. So it has slowed down substantially, which is causing a great deal of frustration. We kept getting kicked out of the system. So, you know, I've got somebody working from midnight to 6 a.m., and half of their time is spent trying to get back into the system that got us kicked out. So it has been frustrating. I will say that it appears that SBA has made some changes to not allow big batching of loans and everybody is on an equal footing where everybody has to manually submit these loans into the system, and it appears to be helping. So the first day we did 208 some odd loans. The first 12 hours of today, we've already done over 208. So hopefully that day two, we will have doubled our production from day one. The one thing that we are seeing is, like I mentioned, the self-employed individuals. Most of our loans this round seem to be smaller. So for the first day and a half that we have done this, our average loan size is right at $50,000. Where in the round one, our average loan size was closer to $250,000. So they have dropped. And I think part of that is simply because of the self-employed individuals that are coming through, didn't have the big payrolls to be able to do that. Rod, as you and I talked, SBA has not given us any real specific in writing guidance on how we deal with farmers, but we are taking the position that we will use the Schedule F for a farmer and use that just like it might be a Schedule C and go ahead and process those loans for those farmers. So we have been doing that as we're going forward. The other big thing that now everybody is clamoring for is because we have out of that $828 million that we funded in round one, I think I've got about $20 million left to fund. The rest of it has already gone out to the small businesses. And everybody is now trying to figure out, okay, what do I got to do to get debt forgiveness? I wish I could tell you. SBA has given us some information, which was in the original IFR. We believe that there will be additional information provided to us, which we have not received yet. You know, we've heard tell that there may be a specific forgiveness application. We've not seen it. We're hopeful that it will come. How much certification or how much documentation is going to be required, we really don't know. I would say, though, we're telling our borrowers, be prepared, have your payroll records, have all your documentation for rent that you've paid, you know, mortgage interest that you've paid, utilities you've paid, all of those things, so that those are the key points that were part of the original IFR in documenting that loan forgiveness. So right now, that's where we stand. I've got a group of 13 people as we speak that are going to be working from 6 p.m. this afternoon, evening, till midnight, and then I've got another 13 people coming in from midnight to 6 a.m. To get these things all pushed through.
Let's just go back over the basics of the program for people that might be joining us that have been hearing the chatter on PPP but hadn't really paid attention until now. Okay. Essentially, the goal of the program was to help keep folks employed or to get small businesses to bring employees back on to their staffs.
If they
furloughed them or laid them off. And so the essence of the program is that you figure out for the preceding year, if you were in business through all of 19, you figure out for the preceding year what your total payroll expenses were for the year. You divide by 12 to get a monthly number, and then you take that times 2.5 times to figure out the amount that you could borrow. Is that a fair summary so far?
That is correct. So it's payroll 941s plus the benefits that you have paid your employees. So all of those things can be added back, divided by 12 times 2.5, and that is the actual loan amount. Then from that loan amount, the SBA wants you to spend 75% of that number on payroll. The remaining 25% can be spent on mortgage interest, utilities, and rent. So if you pay 75% for payroll and then the other 25% in those other three categories, then you are eligible for debt forgiveness where that loan will be completely paid by the SBA.
Okay. A couple other key rules that we want to point out to people is, and most of agriculture, there aren't many in agriculture doing more that are getting more than 100,000, but it only, if you have somebody on payroll that's over 100,000, only the first 100,000 counts when you're doing your formula.
Yeah, and that's true. Correct. And it's, and Rod, it's just on, I mean, if you pay a salary, it's the salary. Benefits do not count in that. It's just the salary itself.
That's correct.
And so that is one limit. The other limit that we're supposed to mention is that it has to be, the business has to be doing legal practices that are legal both statewide and nationally to qualify.
That's correct. The employees have to be residents of the United States, have to be inside the United States.
And the interpretation you're still taking is that H-2 employees, even though they're here 10 months, are you allowing folks to count those or not allowing folks to count those?
If they're here legally, yes, we can count them.
Okay, so if they're here on an H-2A or H-2B program, it's your opinion you can count them. If they're here illegally, then they can't be counted.
That's correct.
Okay. Let's go to a lot of our members, a lot of people in farm and ranch business are pretty much family operations, and they a lot of times don't have a traditional payroll where you pay every Friday or every Monday. They kind of take draws based on their crop seasons or when they have family expenses. So how do we deal with those situations of the sole proprietor or the family business that is pretty much all family help that is operating in that point? You just go to the annual gross off the F or C report?
It's the actual net from the tax return. Net income, not gross, it's the net income.
Okay. And so one of the questions we've already had texted in tonight, and it says Oklahoma Farm Bureau members in this area were told by their accountant that they were ineligible for the PPP because they had shown a loss on their income taxes last year. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So they have to have shown a profit in the year if it's a sole proprietor in order to be able to qualify for the, no matter whether on a Schedule C or a Schedule F, it doesn't matter.
That is correct.
Okay. There's, again, a group that didn't qualify till that April 10th was the independent contractors. And there's a lot of independent contractors in the ag world, whether it's spraying services or fertilizing services or fence building or whatever. And we made clear in the last webinar that if they were paying them, if it's somebody that's getting a 1099 or your contract, the farmer can't count them on their payroll. Those people have to file themselves. Is that still an accurate?
That is correct.
And yes. And then those people would use their tax return if they weren't doing W-2s. They would use those independent contractors would use their tax returns to show what their income was for purposes of the program.
That is correct.
Okay. There's another one just coming in. If you, Dottie, on the EIDL, do you need to show a profit in the operation in order to qualify for the operating loan under EIDL?
Yes. You have to have been operating profitably prior to the disaster date, which I think they're using January the 31st, I believe, or January 30th.
Okay. So if on their last year's tax return they showed a loss, then they're knocked out of the EIDL as well as the PPP if they're a sole proprietor.
Well, if it's showing that they were operating at a loss, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Another member sends in a note that they were told that their agricultural operation wasn't large enough to qualify for a PPP, that it was designed for bigger businesses and small farms and ranches could not qualify for PPP and need to turn to the USDA.
That is not true.
That's totally wrong.
We've done I mean, I've seen loans come through here for $2,500.
And while we're talking.
Yeah, and USDA is not doing disaster.
Okay, so
to my knowledge, the way I would say it is, Rod, there are no minimum loan requirements.
Okay.
So you can, as long as you had profit, you know, divided by 12 times 2.5, you can borrow that amount of money. There is no minimum requirement.
So on that 2,500 example, that would be somebody that had $1,000 a month of income.
$12,000 a year divided by, you know, 12 times 2.5. So they got that. That's what they got.
Okay. And at the high end, which we probably have a few in this audience that are going to have to worry about the high end, the top level that somebody can borrow under the PPP is $10 million.
So that's correct.
Essentially from, it could even be less than $2,500, but from $2,500 to $10 million is the range of the program that you've seen or are aware of. So.
Yes. I mean, and quite honestly, I've not seen a $10 million one. The largest one we've seen is $7.7
million. Here's another one. Bankers in this area, in this customer, in this Farm Bureau members area, have apparently told everyone seeking to apply yesterday that they were not accepting new applications until later this week because they had to process the backlog of applications that were in the system from before. Is that an SBA policy? I'm going to guess that's a bank policy, probably, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a bank policy. I mean, but quite honestly, like I said, I've got 1,700, between 1,500 and 1,700 applications that we are currently working in-house. Those are trying to go. So, you know, if somebody comes in today, they're behind 1,700 loans.
Okay. Dottie, do you have any wisdom on the how long you think that the funds are going to last in this round? What advice would you have to somebody that hasn't applied yet? How quickly do they need to get their paperwork done and get to the bank?
Tomorrow.
Yesterday.
We don't know how, but based on what we're hearing, that might go quickly, but I can't say how long they have to apply. Now, if anybody help with their application, our Small Business Development Center need to help them. We have some accountants on staff there, and there's no cost for them helping clients.
Yeah, it's a free service to call the SBDCs, our Small Business Development Centers, if they need help filling out the application. And I know many of the banks are helpful too. I guess I should be, and we're very, very much appreciate Kent, the Bank First people helping out with these webinars, but we would encourage people to visit with your local bank first, a bank that knows you, and if your bank is not participating, which there's, Kent was just telling me when the call started, when the first round there were, did you say 1,200 banks nationally participating, and now there's over 4,000?
I think it's 5,100 banks participating. I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong information. It's 5,100 banks participating. Okay.
So during this lull, a lot more banks got approved to participate in the program. So there's a lot more people trying to enter into that computer at the moment. So if your banker is not participating, reach out to another banker you feel comfortable with. Reach out to Kent's operation through the Bank First around the state. Or contact us here at Farm Bureau, and we can give you names of other banks that we know are participating. Now, here's several other questions coming in. Does depreciation come into play on Schedule F for net farm income? In other words, can they back out the depreciation to figure out what number they can use to apply for the PPP?
We have not been given any guidance other than use the net income on the Schedule C, which we said we took it onto the Schedule F. So We have not been adding back any depreciation since we have not been given that guidance. You would think it would be there, but we have not received it.
And I've not read it either, so yeah.
Okay. So at the moment we're assuming the depreciation does stay on there, and so it's the net amount after depreciation that the loan can be based on.
That's correct. Rod, here's the crazy thing. What it says is that you need to provide us with a Schedule C or a Schedule F, even if you have not filed your return. Okay? So, you know, if somebody has, but you're supposed to give us the form whether you filed it or not. Okay? So somebody provides me with a Schedule F and they do not include their depreciation, we're going to base it off that number.
Okay.
If somebody has filed it, they've included their depreciation, I'm not going to add it back.
Okay.
I mean, that's how psychotic the system is right now.
Okay. Well, that's there's some good strategy there for people that are listening.
I mean, it does not say, because it really, it says you are to provide us with that Schedule C whether you have filed or not.
Okay. There's several questions coming in about, is there a cap of $100,000 for self-employed sole proprietors because of net profit on Schedule C or F? In effect, that would be true because there's $100,000 limit. So if you are a sole proprietor, if you made over $100,000, you would still only $100,000 would count to divide by 12 times 2.5. So the loan they could borrow would be around $21,000. Does that sound correct?
Pulling out my calculator right here because I can't do anything in my head anymore. It'd be $20,800 would be what they could borrow.
That would be the top amount that a sole proprietor, if they made $100,000 or more in income, could apply for.
That's unless on their Schedule C they paid 941 wages to somebody else that's working for them. You could add those back.
What about rent or utility?
I'll mention the phone number one more time for those that have questions is 405-627-9057 to text questions to that address, and then Dustin's passed them on to me. But you can text to 405-627-9057. What are the things, questions you've been getting, Dottie, what are the things do we need to make sure that folks know about other than they need to apply right away because these funds are not going to last very long? What else do we need to remind them about tonight?
I would just say, you know, follow the guidelines, answer all the questions. One topic that came up today, Kent, was you can ask for money for your utility bills. Somebody said, if I was already behind on my utility before the disaster occurred, can I include that? And I would think the answer would be no, but you may have a different take on that.
I would concur. So basically, when we fund the loan, that's when your 8-week period begins for utilizing those funds. So anything that's in arrears cannot happen. So, you know, well, I've been paying my employees before this happened. Can I include that? No. It is for the 8-week period that begins with the date that you receive the check.
And Kent, that fits in with one of the questions that we just received was, can they, a lot of businesses are seasonal. A couple of people asking, can they schedule when their 8 weeks is, that maybe it starts in May 15th to go to July 15th. And yeah, I think the answer you just gave is you don't have that choice. It starts whenever you actually get funded by the bank is when your 8 weeks
starts. Yes, but I would tell you, Rod, and where that comes from, there were a lot of businesses that were trying to say, okay, I've already laid my people off. They're on unemployment. They're making more money in unemployment than I was paying them anyway. I'm not going to get them back, so I'm going to wait, and I don't want to take my money until this date, okay? And then, because I want to start my 8-week period beginning May 15. Well, the problem is the SBA came back out with new regulations that said lenders are supposed to fund these loans within 10 days of approval. So if we funded a loan today, the 28th, I've got to have it, what would that be, the 7th of May? I got to have it funded.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't, it doesn't give me the ability to stage these things. Now, I think there's going to be a little bit of play, but I don't think there's a lot of play with that 10-day rule with the SBA. So like I said, you know, we did $828 million. I've only got $20 million still that hasn't funded, and we went all the way to the 16th. So we're pushing, you know, to get the rest of them done. So we're 2 days behind on some of them, and some of that is just people being slow getting the documents back to us.
Mm-hmm. And with the program running money going through so quickly, it's probably not a wise idea for somebody to delay application, because they actually could miss their chance to apply for the program if they don't get submitted right away.
Absolutely.
Process, do they come directly to you, or do they go to their relationship banker?
I would highly recommend going to your relationship banker. I mean, quite honestly, my division here has become more of a processing center for getting these things pushed through the E-Trans system more than anything else. So we're using our 60 some odd different Bank First locations around the state to help with the applications, to take that information. They'll put it together. They send it all to me, and then that's where we get it, and we push it through. We actually prepare all the closing documents, send those back out to the banks. The banks will send the checks out or have checks deposited in those individual locations. So we're trying to do this. I mean, we've even gotten where DocuSign electronic signatures are acceptable. We're doing everything we can to push this out as quickly as possible.
And here at other banks, they are using that same procedure.
We're getting several questions from folks that say they've been to their local banker, and they're saying that they've not seen anything in writing that allows them to use the F schedule. That they're saying that they're only allowed to use C schedule. And so that's why some people are still insisting that farmers aren't included in this program. And you say you are using the F schedule. How are you comfortable to do that, or what makes you feel comfortable that farmers and ranchers do qualify and can proceed?
If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So whether it's a Schedule C or a Schedule F, it has the exact same information on it. And like I think I told you before, Rod, if I get pushback from the SBA, I'm going to transcribe it from a Schedule F to a Schedule C. It's the exact same information.
Hey, Kent, this is Steve Thompson here with the Rider Farm Bureau, and our partners nationally with the American Farm Bureau Federation has sent us a kind of an FAQ or something like that from the Treasury Department that had a specific line in it that was new, I guess maybe Friday, that talked about the Schedule F. And they in the Treasury Department's documents, they talked about the F would work in place of the C.
Yeah. There was a whole bunch of stuff in there. I'm looking at it. I didn't see anything. There's talking about agriculture producers, farmers, ranchers, and eligible. Yes. As long as they have less than 500 employees. So, I mean, it is. I don't see anything in there that said anything about the Schedule F. And Dottie, no offense intended, I've always said you can't use logic and SBA in the same sentence. But in this particular case, I would say logic would tell you that the Schedule F and the Schedule C are basically the same documents.
Yeah. I would agree with you, Ken.
I mean, the intent of the program was to include farmers and ranchers in the program, so that's why we're moving ahead doing it that way.
And I would mention, just because many of our farmers and ranchers and Farm Bureau members are also community community activist and deeply involved in nonprofits and churches. This program, again, because it's trying to support payroll and keeping people employed, this program for the most part applies to most nonprofits and to churches as well. So
if the one thing I would say, we've had, yes, how about that? 501c3 is the real key, because the guidelines say it must be a 501c3 nonprofit. So where I have been beating my head up against the wall are rural electric cooperatives, which are 501c12s.
Yeah, don't do those. They're not eligible.
We've been batting our head. Rural hospitals have also been an issue that we're dealing with. We made the determination that we didn't think that they were eligible. There has been some language that has helped for public trusts, but still there is a question as the way that the law was written as to whether or not those things are eligible or not. So be cautious on those. Churches, the one thing that I would tell you is, you can add more back. I had one today where they do not pay their pastor a thing. So there were no 912 to calculate a payment. However, his compensation is totally made up of a housing allowance. Housing allowance are benefits and can be added to the program to calculate what you can do for a church. So just be aware of those kind of fine nuances that are out there.
Okay, we've got a couple that are EIDL and PPP questions that Dottie, there's still a lot of controversy about if someone has an EDIL, whether they can apply for a PPP or if they have to pay back the EIDL if they get a PPP, or you can have both, but they have to be for different things. Can we get some clarity about what the overlap is or isn't between EIDLs and PPPs?
Oh, I think, Kent, do you want to take that one?
I was hoping you would take that one. Okay. My understanding is, yes, you can get both an EIDL and a PPP. Okay? But you cannot use them for the same. If you use the EIDL for payroll, you cannot use that same funds towards the reimbursement and the 75% requirement under the PPP. So you're not going to get debt forgiveness under PPP if you use the EIDL money that way. As far as the reimbursement, I think the way it reads on the application, if you had received your EIDL money, or at least the $10,000 advance prior to April 3rd, you could add it to the PPP calculation, and then once you got your PPP loan, you are supposed to repay the EIDL loan. That the thing that I am seeing is, I don't know that anybody in Oklahoma got their EIDL $10,000 before April 3rd.
Yeah, I would say that you're right. I haven't talked to anybody that got their money early. I think people that got early money were it. The states that had the declarations early on, which is like California and New York.
So what I'm telling people is, if you got the $10,000 for the EIDL after you got the PPP, you just keep the EIDL money. You don't have to pay it back because you did not add it to the PPP calculation.
Right. Don't double dip.
Yeah. So if the EIDL loan was for operating expenses or overhead that was separate and didn't include labor, you could have both an EIDL and a PPP because
that's
the PPP
correct.
Is supposed to be for labor. But if both are for labor, then you're probably going to have to return one or the other.
Right.
Well, not return, but you may not get debt forgiveness under the PPP program.
Okay.
So then you're stuck with a 18-month loan at 1%.
Yeah, let's talk about the loan rate for a minute. We haven't done that in this call. The legislation said that the loan can be for up to 2 years, and the rate is set in the legislation at 1%. Now, from what I've heard from different banks around the state, Some are doing 6-month loans, some are doing a year, most are doing 2-year loans. But the 1% is, it's regardless of what bank they're dealing with, it's a 1% interest rate, isn't it?
That's correct. My understanding is that it is a 2-year commitment that the bank has to make. What we're doing in our notes are, we're saying that it is a 2-year loan with the first 6 months deferred, and then we actually calculate a payment based on the 18 months remaining.
Right, because otherwise you'd have a balloon payment if you don't do it that way. Is that correct?
Which is not eligible at the SBA, typically not eligible at the SBA.
Right, you don't.
So when it comes forgiveness time, which we kind of know the general layout of what forgiveness is going to be, but there's specifics, we're expecting there's still going to be some more specifics that are developed over time. But let's just to keep it simple, let's say it was a $100,000 PPP loan. They go in for forgiveness, and for some reason, payroll and overhead comes out at $90,000. That's forgiven, they would still have a $10,000 note at 1% interest rate for the remaining 18 months.
That's correct. That is correct.
On the other hand, if they do what they're supposed to and keep their full staff, have the same staff numbers as what they had going into the COVID time period, and so they have at least 75% of that is covered by payroll, and then the other 25% is utilities or rent or mortgage, the interest on mortgage payments, then they could have the full loan forgiven and they would actually be zero loan at that stage.
That's correct.
We've got another question on the EIDL. How will a profitable farmer apply for EIDL? You're saying if they didn't have a profit, they can't apply, but how can a profitable farmer apply for an EIDL?
As soon as they open the portal, that you go in, it's an online application, you fill it out, everything's done online. So they just need to keep watching SBA.gov, and then you hit the coronavirus, and it'll tell you if that is open yet.
Let me tell you,
on EIDLs, they do, because this was not real clear to a lot of people, they do a hard credit check on you for that program. So if you've frozen your credit, you need to unfreeze it before you apply. Because we've had a couple of people this week saying they were told by SBA they couldn't process their loan application because they couldn't run a credit check on them.
Okay, Dottie, may I ask you a question for an EIDL?
Yes.
If I have applied for an EIDL, but the initial funding for EIDL ran out, do I have to reapply?
Okay, we are being told stuff right now, no. Right now, they're processing everything in the queue, then open the portal to new applications.
Perfect. Thank you.
But Dottie, they've not given you any idea of whether that's going to likely be a day or a week, or we have no idea at all when that's likely to open.
No, because they have a lot of applications. They haven't given us the numbers, but they said that they're working 24/7 on the applications.
Okay, so just back to summarize on PPP. You can have as few as one employee, being an independent contractor or a sole proprietor, and you can be as many as 500 employees in most cases. There's a couple of exceptions, but so basically from one employee to 500 employees can qualify for the PPP. And the amount is based on your payroll plus benefits for the year divided by 12 and then times 2.5. Then you would do a loan for a 1% interest rate, likely for a 2-year, most banks it'll be a 2-year note at a 1% interest rate. And then sometime after June 30th, you'll go back in to sit down with your banker. I think you said in your case, because there's so many, you've set it up as a 6-month note before you come back in to sit down. or sometime in that 6 months, you go back in to sit down to figure out what actually is forgiven and what note you have left. Is that?
Rod, they have not. I don't think it's going to be quite that long. Basically, I believe that the borrower has up to 60 days after his 8 weeks has expired. Okay. So that's going to take us 120 days, I guess. So, he's got 60 days after the 8 weeks expires to make application to have submitted to the SBA. And then the bank has another 60 days, quite honestly, to submit that information to the SBA for them to approve the borrower's request for forgiveness. And then the SBA has another 15 days to cut a check back to the bank for the bank to apply to the credit of that individual's account.
Okay. Well,
now that is subject to change, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Well, we've got both of you on. The program was so popular and way more money than Congress expected when they ran through the $349 billion so quickly, and now we have this additional $310 billion. And you all are predicting it may run out in a matter of days or say even up to 2 weeks. But do the two of you think that there will be another round after this if it does go run out of money that quickly, or do you think this is it?
I don't know. I'm rubbing the magic lamp for an answer. I have no idea. I haven't heard anything either way.
The last thing I heard, Rod, was the next focus may be state and local governments.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting.
And infrastructure is the other thing I keep hearing. So, it's a lot more where everybody, all the political leaders were acting pretty certain there would be a second round. There's not. Doesn't sound like there's nearly such a consensus that there may be a third round. So this may be the final chance to participate, is I guess what we're saying. Yeah. It's no certainty. It's not as certain there'll be a third round as it was that there was a second round. So
correct.
Yeah, that would be my read also. So we would just really encourage you, if it's something that interests you, to get with your banker and try to get the paperwork started.
Let's go to the banker question. Another question that just came in is they applied in the first round a few days before they don't use the bank a lot. They had applied with a banker who said they were going to turn it in and they never got word back, and they've been trying to reach the banker and to see if they held on to it to apply in the second round, but they can't even get a return phone call. Can they just go to another bank and apply to somebody that will return their calls, or do they need to keep trying to harass the banker they first contacted?
We have heard this numerous times, Rod. And some of those, basically what happens is I would probably reapply with somebody else if they're not going to return your phone calls. The problem is, though, that you're going to have to be back in the queue. So, I mean, if they could contact their existing borrower and banker and find out exactly where they are they in fact doing it, you know, that would be, I think, the preferred way. What happens in ETRAN is if bank one has applied, bank two will be locked out. If bank two beats bank one, bank one will be locked out. So you can only be in one time.
Okay.
So you just have to be careful how you go about that. And but different banks have different reasons. We ran across one bank who just said, okay, we've done all of these that we want to do at our bank level. We don't want to do any more. So everybody else, sorry, we're not doing any more.
Yeah, because when you're talking of this much lending in a short period of time, it can have some pretty profound impacts on bank balance sheets and bank.
Yes,
bank
absolutely.
So it creates a lot of issues for you all in the banking world as well.
Absolutely. We're looking at our funding on a daily basis to make sure that we know where we are. Now, I will tell you, the Fed has put in some systems whereby we can increase our liquidity, or we can pledge these back to the Fed and bring more liquidity back into the bank. Right now, we've not had to do that. We're just working off the liquidity that the bank had in the system.
And just so folks understand, I mean, this was a sudden, this is the first time SBA has dealt with a program anywhere near this scale, and it's also a first for banks to be dealing with this volume in this short of a time. And the way banks are being remunerated is they get the 1% interest rate, but they also get a fee depending on the size of the transaction from 1% to 5%. So a higher percentage on small deals and a smaller percentage processing fee on the bigger. Is that a fair assumption of how it's working so that you can That's pay correct. Your payroll and operate?
That's correct.
And actually, the Congress came up with this idea because they knew there was no way, they knew there wasn't staff at the SBA or any other government institution to do this many transactions this quickly. And so that's why they turned to the banking industry to fulfill this mission to get funds out into the economy so quickly.
Rod, I told somebody that typically Bank First does somewhere between 130 to 140 SBA loans a year. And we did almost 5,500 in 14 days.
That's a pretty good growth rate.
Yeah, it was crazy.
But they're not quite as long a term as your usual 15-year term as it is.
It is not.
Another question that came in, if you're the only employee on a self-employed salary, to them, can that be paid to yourself? You're the only employee. I guess they're asking whether the funds you get off the loan, if you're a sole proprietor, obviously you're the ones getting the regular payroll. So the funds off the loan are going to be coming back to you as well. Is that
correct? Yes. And we have seen, for whatever reason, self-employed people that pay themselves a W-2 wage. So you can have it both. You can do both.
Okay. We imposed. I told each of you we were going to impose on you for about an hour, and we're getting close to that magic hour. And most of the other questions are coming in seem to be kind of duplicates of the same subject matters. I guess I'll turn to each of you for a minute to. See if there's any final thoughts you've got of things that we want to call to folks' attention about the PPP Paycheck Protection Program. Dottie, any special thoughts you've got as we wrap up tonight's call?
No, just if you're interested in the EIDL, you're just going to have to keep checking the website. Or you can call my office. We could tell you. We'll know when the portal's open.
Dottie, if I can impose on you, when you notice that, if you think of it, if you can send me a text, we'll have Dustin put it out on our Farm Bureau Facebook page and web page and the email of the folks that have responded to these PPP webinars, so we can update all of them directly instead of individual phone calls. We'll put that information when that portal goes back up. If you'd be gracious enough to give me an update.
Yes, and I'll be happy to do that. Also, Rod, the Small Business Development Centers are doing seminars on the EIDL loan program. So once it gets cranking, you know, if somebody wants to just sit in on one of their seminars, I'll send you that information also.
Okay, and those, just for folks that aren't familiar with those Small Business Development Centers, they're amazing resources for small businesses, whether they're in agriculture or Main Street businesses or whatever. They do everything from helping with business plans to all kinds of business management workshops and training. And those are generally located regionally across our state, aren't they, Dottie?
Yes, they're predominantly on university campuses. Their main center is out of Durant, Oklahoma, at Southeastern University. The state director is Michelle Campbell. And the staff of the SBDCs, they have some people who are, I don't think we have any attorneys left, but we have people that are CPAs, people that are marketing experts. So there's a lot of good free information out there and free assistance.
Okay. By the way, I'll give one other plug to Dottie. They have some funds to help with especially trying to spur some rural development, which is something the president has been, President Trump has been very motivated about, and it's inspired the SBA to even step up their prior efforts on. And Dottie has been helping us brainstorm on some ways that we can inspire, create a rural development venture fund in our state and get more rural business development going. So Dottie, thank you for your help on that in addition to these webinars.
Thank you.
Kent, you've been on the front lines on this. You've been on the front lines of SBA lending and small business lending for decades now, and certainly on the front lines of this PPP effort. Any other special thoughts you've got as we wrap up tonight's call?
No, I'm like Dottie. If you think this is something that would help your business, you need to move quickly. I'm like Dottie also that I don't know how long this is going to last. You know, we lasted about 10 days with the first round. Once we actually got this thing going, I believe that the system is starting to pick up steam again. So, if I had to guess, we probably got through the end of this week, before things exhaust. So, there is time now. If you can get with your banker and see if they've got the ability to push this thing through with you, I'd move as quickly as possible.
Yeah, good advice.
Well, we're so grateful to the two of you for helping make this program a little clearer for our members. It's certainly a unique program and unlike anything we've seen before, trying to deal with these unique and disruptive times that we're facing with the COVID-19 virus. And we appreciate all of our community bankers across the state that are participating in the program and helping make these funds available to our farms, ranches, and Main Street and small businesses. And we hope that it plays a key role in helping maintain as much private sector employment as possible. So thank you all for your efforts. Before we close tonight, I want to plug another webinar that Oklahoma Farm Bureau is going to be doing on Thursday night about kind of a look at the USDA programs and the status of the agriculture industry, so to speak, in the way it's been affected by COVID-19. And we're going to be having Dr. Bart Fisher, who was a leader of the House Ag Committee staff in Washington, D.C. for Congressman Lucas on the Ag Committee for many years, and now is heading the Research Center at Texas A&M. And Dr. Amy Hagerman, who's the ag economist at OSU, be on a conference call this Thursday night at 7. Thad got a chance to go through the program with Bart today and tells me it's well worth your time to get a view of what's going on across agriculture before COVID and after COVID. And so we can brainstorm about where we go from here and a little bit of a look at where we think the USDA programs or relief programs are going to be to help farmers survive with these shocking price changes that we're facing on many of the commodities. So Oklahoma Farm Bureau is working hard to try to get information to you and to help us all respond to these trying times. And we hope you enjoyed the PPP seminar tonight. Again, we're very grateful to Dottie Overall and Kent Faison. And get out and meet with your local banker as soon as possible. If you have any troubles with your local banker, call us here at Farm Bureau and we'll give you ideas of bankers in nearby communities that you can talk to. But time is of the essence, and we'll see you again on Thursday night. Thank you for joining us.